I'm reading this one comment on Facebook from yesterday that said, did you legally change your name to Mance Raider or did you hit the lotto? My guest today is just an all-around cool dude. I've been following his work for a while now, and he's done a ton of interviews with great people like Tom Woods and Dave Smith. I'll link to all those. But a little about Mance. He grew up in New York City in what he called a government-controlled nightmare. Go kidding. No kidding. But he eventually made his way towards libertarianism. He's the host of the podcast Free Man Beyond the Wall, which I'll link to, and he's the author of now two books. The first of which is called Freedom Through Memedom, the 31-day guide to waking up to liberty. At the end of 31 days, your mind will be tuned to see how the state has put you in a free-range pen. And that first step to getting out of it is to recognize their deceptions at every step. Amen. Now, his new book, and I got it in the mail yesterday, it looks great. You can see it right behind me. It's titled The Kids Are Not All Right, a meme-enhanced primer on encroaching Marxism in the West. And most definitely, we'll discuss this a ton, the kids are not all right. They're brainwashed. They're clueless. I see this every day at my college. The book's forwarded by Dave Smith, which is awesome. It's been praised by Jeff Dice and the great Scott Horton. Now, Scott Horton, I would consider him the world's leading foreign policy expert. So when he gives the AOK on something, you know, it's definitely a good read. So the book's interesting, full of memes. It's overall a fun read. So go check it out. I'll have all the Amazon links in the show notes page. And I'm happy to welcome on Mance Raider. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Stephen.
Absolutely. Before we dive into your new book, maybe tell us anything that I forgot to mention, or maybe if you had a few thoughts to share. Why did you write the book?
I wrote the book because I've been an anarchist for a long time, but it was only in the last couple years, and mostly listening to Dave Smith, that I realized that the culture was really important. You know, we can talk about exactly what culture means. That's a very misunderstood word. But he opened my eyes to the fact that if we expect things to get better, if our goal is to try and make things get better, or at least to be able to influence people, that if the culture is repressive, if the culture has an attitude of seeking to suppress free speech, suppress free thought, well, we're in trouble. And the reason I wrote the book is because I've noticed in the last 5 to 6 years that there is a dominant culture coming off of college campuses that is seeking to do just that. And it needs to be stopped. And more importantly, we need to educate young people who are heading to the college campus so that they can watch out for this.
I mean, it's crazy, man. So I go to a college of 42,000 people. It's divided among three different campuses. So I know exactly what you're talking about. People are just, for no other better word, brain dead. I don't know what to say other than that. I mean, they just really don't think for themselves. Education itself's been going downhill since FDR, really. I mean, you look to 1932 when there was about 128,000 school districts, and nowadays there's less than 14,000. So the population's increased by multiples, but we've centralized everything to such an extent.
Well, I'm reading Thomas Sowell's new book, Discrimination and Disparities, and you were talking about, you know, all the school districts and how they've basically they've shrunk them. Well, I mean, they basically consolidated them. And he uses the example of this one high school in the Washington, D.C. area that I can't remember the name of it now. Forgive me, Dr. Sowell. The school had it was like a 100% black enrollment, but they had like 75% of their graduates went on to college and went on to honors in college, and it was remarkable. And when I guess people didn't like this in the 50s, and see, this is a school that it was sort of a charter school, sort of like a precursor to a charter school. And what it would do is it would only accept certain students. You had to have, you had to have a certain grade point average coming out of school. You had to be able to pass an aptitude test. And they shut that down in the 50s for diversity, quote unquote diversity. And so they were forced to take now only students that were in the immediate neighborhood, and the immediate neighborhood was a high crime area. So it immediately, the school just went to shit. You know, it just basically, all the scores went down. Now they weren't going. I mean, it almost seems, if I was a conspiracy-minded fellow, it almost seems like it was done on purpose so that this school could, you know, this school could stop pumping out, you know, affluent black, you know, black thinkers.
It's almost like a sick joke that the very same policies that destroy minority communities are used to act in the name of minority communities. Like, we're trying to raise these people up. I was doing research a few months ago, and I was looking at what percentage of people going into college from high school have to take remedial classes, namely remedial English, remedial math. These are classes that are lower than, I forget what the college level class number is, but these aren't college level classes yet. You have to take those to get to that level. For Baltimore City Community College, something like 97% of the kids that enrolled, I forget which year, had to take remedial classes. That's scary. That means, I mean, another statistic I could point out, I could throw them out all day. Detroit, I think still to this day, like 47% of the population, the adult population is illiterate. What does it mean to be illiterate? It means you can't fill out a job application. You can't, can you even sign your name? I don't know. That's just such a scary thought. It's hard to fathom.
How do they, you know, even, I mean, I don't want to bring up welfare or, you know, assistance. You know, I consider, you know, I have, there are people who actually, you know, absolutely need it at this point, because, you know, we haven't set up a society that could, you know, that family could help them, or that, you know, private charity could help them. Like in the past, the poor relied on and, you know, did rather well, a lot better than they do today. You know, how does a person go in and fill out their application, their government application? Somebody must be filling it out for them. Like I said, with the school, it almost seems like it's planned, like it's a it's a grand conspiracy. But it's really odd that it's really odd that if you look at the 1950s, in the North and in the South to a certain extent, but in the North, the average black family, the father worked, the mother didn't have to work, the children went to school. The father had a great job with a, you know, say in Detroit, they, you know, worked at Ford or worked at, you know, worked for Chevrolet, and everything was, it was the quote unquote, the American dream at the time, work 40 years and get a gold watch. And, you know, we went through the 60s where, you know, this, these programs came out that basically destroyed the nuclear family in the black community. And
I apologize for being such a nerd. I just thought I'm day three on my ketogenic diet today, so my mental clarity has just been like amazing today. But looking from 1950 to 1965, you notice that poverty dropped from about 32.2% to about 17 point something percent, so like nearly halved before any of the new welfare stuff came in the 60s. Well, from 1960 to like 2012, the poverty rate dropped like 2%. And that was after like $22 trillion in spending. So even before the war on poverty was started, poverty was nearly halved. Then after $22 trillion in spending, dropped like 2%. So like pretty much no improvement. And you look to, you see this in pretty much all areas where government comes in and they make the problem. It might get better, but at a slowly declining rate. Whereas it was getting much better before. Same thing with like labor laws. Yeah. Like, let's just name out an area. It got better before government got involved.
Yeah, but yeah, I know we've been talking about this, and this is really important. I mean, I live in Atlanta now. That is,
we'll get into your book eventually, by the way. But
yeah, yeah, I live in Atlanta now, which is a huge black population, but it's also the city in the world that has the most black millionaires. I know through my business, I know a lot of them, and I've met a lot of them, and most of them are first generation. You know, they went out and did it for themselves. You know, we have Morehead College here, which is a historically black college. The black people that I know love to get like advanced degrees and get multiple advanced degrees. They do really, I mean, it's, but, and here's the thing, this, the subject of my book, which is this thought that's coming off of the college campus that the only way that you can get ahead and you can have success in life is to rob, cheat, and steal other people. Well, explain this city. I mean, they're not all, these people are not, these black millionaires, they're not all playing for the Atlanta Falcons and the Atlanta Braves and,
and
the Atlanta Hawks. No, they're going to school and then they're going out there and they're getting amazing jobs and they're investing money and they're, some of them are, you know, starting businesses. God, you know, it's,
these kids would want to,
what's their explanation to them? Who did they cheat to get everything that they got?
Exactly. And it's just crazy. It's despicable to think that if you're a black educated person, that you're just an Oreo or you're trying to be like Whitey or something like that. And that's been like an its own culture in itself. The fact that we need to keep minorities stupid because otherwise we're just giving in to like Western civilization. It's the most bizarre idea ever. And you're exactly right. There is something fishy going on here that you have all these black people and any minority groups that are successful when they're free. When they're free to, you know, not be harassed or be slaves. Here's another statistic that just left us hate, and it's controversial. Black families are more intact under slavery than they were after the welfare state.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's obvious. Anybody who studied the numbers, they love to throw out, in reading Dr. Soule's new book, they love to throw out numbers like, you know, oh, we did a study and 44% of black people that applied for mortgages were denied, but it was 22 for white people. And Dr. Soule points out and goes, yeah, if you look at the amount, the percentage for Asians, it's 11% that get denied for Asians. So are white people being judged or being discriminated against
exactly
twice the amount that Asians are? I mean, he just looks at these numbers and he just, you know, makes this stuff fall flat on its face. I mean, all these. This is really the subject of the book, is just how these people are, they're completely disingenuous and they're liars. I mean, they're
this is a really good segue right here, because your first chapter is titled Thieves and Liars. And this gets to the essence of what socialists are. They're thieves and liars. You have this one meme in chapter one that basically goes, I don't want a tax cut. I want maintained bridges. I want less infant mortality. I want well-paid teachers. And it just goes on and on. Your response is quite funny, but yeah, these people don't want a tax cut because they probably aren't paying any taxes. And here's, sorry for all the statistics today, I'm probably sounding arrogant. The top 1% pays 39% of all federal taxes. The top 10% pays 70.6%. And the bottom 50% pays 2.83% of federal taxes. So pretty high chance that these people who are against the tax cuts don't pay anything really themselves.
Well, and I'm sure that and this is going to be sarcastic, but I'm sure that since the tax cut hit, that they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they send in at the old rate. I'm sure they're not seeking to take advantage of it.
There's videos of, I forget who does it. I think it's like Campus Reform. There's a few other good people that, you know, they go and troll these leftists and they ask them like, are you for higher taxes? And they're like, yeah. Are you for higher taxes on yourself? God, no. Like I'm a struggling person. Like I shouldn't be taxed more. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, it's just anything that involves them. It'd be because their whole mentality is there are plenty of people out there that do well enough to take care of me. I'm sitting here struggling. Why would you expect me to take care of myself? There's plenty of people that do well already. I mean, I think that's their general mindset, is that it's very, very selfish when you look at it from that angle.
Well, they're so disingenuous. They throw out, you know, oh, if you require voter ID, which I have my own. I think voting, we could talk about that if you want to, but you know, they talk about, oh, voter ID laws are prejudiced against black people. So they sent a guy into Harlem and asked, and started just asking random black people, do you know where to go get a driver's license? They're like, yeah, right down there. right over there. Yeah. It's it asked all these people, and you know, they told some of them that, you know, these white kids on college campus say that you don't know where to go get an ID. And it's just remarkable that they have this. That's the height of propaganda.
And isn't it racist to say that because you're black, you are totally incapable of getting an ID? I mean, you must not have $20 in your pocket, you poor black person. Like, couldn't it be racist from that sense? Like, you're saying people are competent enough to get an ID? I see a lot of homeless people with IDs. I see a lot of homeless people with cell phones. I live in Denver, and there's a huge homeless population. A lot of them have the basic necessities. These would have been luxuries in 1970, and Tom Woods talks about the things we have in our cars nowadays: air conditioning, MP3 player, windshield wipers. This would have been luxuries to have in your house in 1970. But most, like 99% of plus people in the U.S. have a refrigerator, microwave, all these basic essentials. Things that would have been a miracle to have. They did laundry by hand back in the day, folks, with a washboard.
Well, to go back to the meme you were talking about, it's really not a meme. It was a tweet that I had copied and that I had taken a screenshot of. And basically, if you go down the list, everything he's saying, take my money for so that you can pay for it. He's saying bridges. Okay, if you're a constitutionalist, bridges are the government's purview. Less infant mortality, that's government science. I want well-paid teachers. Oh, so government schools, federally funded science, clearly saying he wants government science, like the Tuskegee syphilis experiments in Alabama that from 1936 to 1972 in my lifetime gave syphilis to black people just so that they could watch and see how it would, you know, how it would affect them, and did it under the guise of free health care.
I wanted to talk about that because I actually learned about that in my intro to psych class this semester. We talked about this, and obviously I didn't get a libertarian perspective from it. It sounded like the government did this to black people, so we need more government regulations it was just an argument for more government regulations. And it's just like, but I forget how many people died during that.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean, you just look at these pictures, and they did this to these people. I mean, you know, they started doing this before MK Ultra, you know, so it's, but you're going to trust the government for science? The government, I mean, these are some of the most evil people on the planet. I mean, there's so many sociopaths working for the government. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, look, I saw a black activist on Twitter not an hour ago who had posted up something about how anybody who questions the FBI should be investigated. And I'm like, the FBI persecuted black people for decades.
The FBI that just failed to catch the Parkland shooter when he said, I'm going to be a professional school shooter, that FBI? Or are we talking about a three different letter organization, right?
Well, obviously this is a person who hates Trump. So, you know, he's going to side with the devil because the devil is trying to take down Trump, not realizing the idiocy of a black American promoting and saying that the FBI can do no wrong, and if you speak out against them, you're a traitor and you should be investigated. These people are absolutely, I mean, this is why I'm an anarchist. These people are absolutely insane. They've given a let's let the organization with a monopoly on force, you know, to dictate our lives. I mean,
it should work out fine. Oh man, you're really fun to talk to, Mance. This is the first time me and Mance have talked, by the way. I reached out to him. I was like, dude, like, your new book looks great. I'm going to go ahead and order it. Hope it'll be here by the time we record. So glad we were able to set this up, Mance. It's been fun so far, but I got a ton of more questions for you. So compulsion is another theme you have. And this one meme on page 10 that shows Obama saying, I've been very clear in this matter. You must buy the insurance you don't want. on my website that doesn't work, or I will fine you. So, I mean, you point out fees increasingly like 300%. And this is the thing a lot of people don't get about Obamacare is that if you're a poor person and you have a $5,000 deductible, if you don't have $5,000 in your pocket, you, for all intents and purposes, don't have insurance. You have to pay that out of pocket before insurance covers anything. So high deductible and being poor, it's uninsured basically. So it's just a big scam.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the, I mean, it's a scam. I mean, the government being able to step in and saying you have to buy something. I mean, where is the self-determination? You know, what a great phrase, self-determination. But now you or you're going to be fined. I mean, this is peak. And Obamacare is an example that I use to show people what peak socialism is, because they had to mandate. The mandate was the most evil thing about it. But they had to mandate that everyone buy it or that everyone get fined, because there's no way else. There's no other way they could have paid for it.
Yeah, there's no way to fund this. There's absolutely no way to fund this. And
so you have to force everybody who's over 18, every taxpayer who's over 18 years old has to kick in. And I mean, that's evil. That's evil on top of it. But, you know, I mean, I know people who I know a gentleman who has a 100% disabled child. And, you know, thankfully, he's well to do, owns several businesses. But his premiums for the year went up to $14,000 from like two. I mean, he had to pay it because out of pocket, it would, you know, he's paying this. If he had to pay cash every year, it would be insane. So, I mean, people just do. All they cared about was, oh, poor people need. But, you know, if you have a $5,000, like my insurance is a if I have to go and. My deductible for surgery is $2,000. Okay, that's corporate insurance through the company I work for. But I understand that, and I make concessions for that. But I mean, I'm not a poor person. A poor person. Some of these ones. You know, I had a friend who, you know, was not well to do, and immediately when Obamacare came out, he got it. And he was paying something like $55 a month for it. But like you said, he had like a $4,000 deductible. So it's like, how does he get anything? Doesn't have $4,000.
I had Dr. Mary Reward on a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you know her. She has a new book out called Death by Regulation. And one thing
she's amazing.
I love her. She's so sweet. She's so amazing. But, you know, talk about culture. The culture of medicine nowadays is, how many times can I get to the doctor's office to do a useless checkup, a useless trivial checkup, versus maybe allowing the FDA to allow medicines to come on to the market to actually save people's lives? So the FDA kills people. And my God, this Alfie Evans case over the past few days, I just wrote an article on it, and it'll probably be published on Liberty Hangout one of these days. But man, it was just government violence, because at the end there, I don't know if you read what was happening. The court ruled that, taking the kid off the ventilator, kid basically just suffocated and starved to death. And there was a hospital in Italy that was saying, hey, we'll fly the kid over for free. We'll try some other experimental procedures. And the parents were like, my God, of course, try to save my child. And they said, no. They said, no, you're not going to, this child's going to die in that hospital. And the child just died. It's horrible. It's just horrible. But this is government run healthcare. This is evil.
Well, even, you know, the point that I tried to make about it was, you know, just, I mean, it was what a horrible situation, but the fact that there is no, that's your child and you can't choose to take it to, what if they just wanted to take it home so that he could die? What if they said, okay, we're not going to do that. We just want to take it home so that he can die at home.
Right.
Would they have stopped that? I mean, you know, the thing is, where do you get off telling a parent that they can't do they can't have determination over their child?
Yeah, like your child, is stuck there on their armed guards. There's this one tweet showing the armed guards around the hospital because people are rioting, and for good reason, man. If they'd had armed guards, otherwise people would have rushed in to grab that child. The child could have possibly been saved. You know, I wrote an article about this, and it's going to be published, like I said, in a few days probably. But one thing I talk about, and I mentioned in the articles, is one, well, it's just a big, it's one article that shows all these different cases of brain dead patients coming back to life against all odds. Like there's patients that their organs are about to be harvested, and they eventually come back to life. So a doctor's word that they're brain dead doesn't mean you should kill them. I mean, obviously it's a tough situation. You don't want people to suffer, but oh God, it's just disgusting. It's immoral. It's senseless.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had, you know, what's amazing about Twitter is the amount of people in Britain, Canada, and Australia who are absolutely brainwashed statists. I mean, I had a guy from Britain yesterday who was telling me, you know, was, well, you know, the child was in the hospital. Those policemen out there were protecting the nurses. They were protecting the people that worked there. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works. And also, that's why they took your guns away, so they could get away with doing stuff like this. Because you think the Bundy Ranch, you know, something like that happens here and it gets wide. It goes wide. The Bundy Ranch is going to look like a little skirmish. Mm. I mean, you will have people showing up with guns, and there will be a showdown. That's not going to, I mean, it could happen here because they want to take away guns, right? You know, I mean.
Oh, it's getting to the point where they're just literally saying it now. We're going to pry it from your cold, dead hands, no problem. They're just literally flat out saying it, this stuff now. Before it was kind of conjecture, like, you know, we're kind of strawmanning you, like, okay, we understand you just want to get rid of the big black rifles, but maybe we actually know that deep down you don't want to get rid of guns. Now we can't even parody them. They're just literally saying, take the guns.
Well, yeah, I mean, this same Brit yesterday was making, you know, use this argument that, you know, I was talking about how that wouldn't happen here because we have rifles, and he automatically changed the subject to the old meme of, well, only cowards carry guns. and he had just said, yeah, I had gotten sick of talking to him, and I had thrown a meme at him, and he's like, oh, you threw a meme at me. You don't even have an argument anymore. And I came back to him and I said, you just said that the only reason people carry guns is because they're cowards, and you're telling me I don't have an argument?
But he wants the government to come take all the guns, and the government having the guns. I mean, what do you call them?
And not only fuck you, you're over in the fucking you're over in Britain. If you don't like guns, don't come here.
Or you and Britain,
I don't care about your opinion.
Get acid thrown on your face in Britain. I mean, they've had like hundreds of acid attacks in the past few years. Maybe it's in the thousands. I don't know.
It's amazing, man. After Parkland, the people that, you know, I just immediately started saying, you know, going pro-gun on everything on Twitter. And the people that came after me were all from Canada, Australia, and Britain. And I'm like, why do I care what you have to say?
Yeah.
Why do I mean, this doesn't even affect you. Stop virtue signaling. And you're just,
that's,
you know,
that's all of it is virtue signaling. Well, shoot, we could probably just talk about 3 hours about this, but I love chapter 2 because you talk about the villains, and most of us got a shoddy public school education, let's be honest. And I've talked about that a lot in past episodes. So this one meme you have here, it's a picture many of us have seen. And again, it's not really a meme. It's like a picture of what looks like to be a page out of a public school history book saying things like, quoting this, "Think of what you really want out of life. Do you want to live a long time? Do you want to be healthy? Have a home and family? Go snowboarding?" And it lists more and more things, but it says none of these would be possible without the government. What do you think about that, Mance? I know what I think about it.
I was willing, in my commentary on that, I was willing to give them all that. Okay, you think that in order to do all of these things, you need a government. Okay, I'm willing to give you all that. It's the second part that I went after, because I mean, that's hilarious. I mean, to think that
you're snowboarding without government, man.
And that's, And that's racist. I mean, how many people, and it's classist because how many people go snowboarding? I mean, come on. That's just you're virtue signaling to the rich there. But the second circled part there is friggin' remarkable. And I have the book here.
Yeah, go ahead and read it. I just pulled out a quick quote from that, but man, this stuff's insane.
What were we going to say?
I was just going to say, I love the book because a lot of these memes and stuff I've already seen before. So watching your commentary on it, it's just hilarious. Go ahead, man.
Well, they go on to say, after he said that, you know, you won't be able to, you know, take a shower without the government. He says, one glance around the world in our time shows us that this happens often. The crimes Hitler committed against those he didn't approve of in World War II spring quickly to mind. But that's not the end by a long shot. Millions have been killed in the last half of the 20th century in Cambodia, Bosnia, Rwanda, and the Middle East. Yet we are more stable in our country because if something like that ever starts, the government stops it and has enough power to do something about it.
So Pol Pot, who killed, what was it, like, 3.5 million people during that short time period?
Teachers, yeah,
that was
all the intellectuals, yeah.
If only they had a government. So the government didn't do that. Wow.
Or Rwanda. Oh my goodness. You know, Germany. God, if Nazi Germany would have just had a government,
you know,
wouldn't have died.
Remember when Hitler came into power and decentralized everything? The best ones lately is we got to give over our guns to literally Hitler.
I'm being honest when I say that the reason I wrote this book is, and honestly, is these people are insane.
That's what's scary too. They think we're insane because we're capitalists and we believe in free trade and free cooperation. Like, all we think about is profit. And profit, by the way, is just, you know, it's making a sacrifice and getting more out of it than you sacrifice. Like, oh, it's terrible. Like, you got to always be in the loss to be moral.
Well, I mean, and that's every government. Every government's pretty much in the loss. But they're insane. How do you think that shutting down? Okay, we're gonna punch Nazis. How? So, what do you think? You think that's gonna stop them?
Well,
you think all of a sudden they're just gonna get hit with a limp wrist punch? And say you punch an actual Nazi, which these people aren't doing. I mean, I guarantee you, at the inauguration last year, all those people that got arrested when they got thrown into jail, if they were actual Nazis in jail, I guarantee you they weren't punching them.
These people are way too hungry to punch people. I mean, they don't have the carbs, they don't have the energy to. Or, I mean, I'm being a little rude, but you know, you look at some of these communists, man. They're skinnier than I am. I'm skinny, but I eat a lot. Don't judge me. But these people look like they're starving. They kind of live up to the end game of the philosophy there. All right, man. I'm good. Next question. So your book obviously talks about cultural Marxism a lot. And there was a video years ago of this white guy with dreads at his college who was being harassed by this black girl. And she was saying, you know, you're white, you can't wear dreads. And he's like, no, there's Egyptians that wore dreads. They were white, blah, blah, blah. So just kind of this hilarious, awkward conversation, and this stuff's crazy. You can't make this stuff up. And one of the little memes, you had a picture of that. I thought it was funny because I remember watching that video when it came out years ago. I'll try to link to that at the end.
Well, we can go today to something that happened on Twitter today, and Tom Woods actually got involved with it. I'm going to try and find it, but cultural appropriation came up today,
I think I probably saw that earlier. I forget the content. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a white girl had decided to wear an Asian kind of Chinese dress to her prom. And so she posted it up And then this absolute psychopath quoted, "What was the theme of your prom? Casual racism?"
Oh my God. And, I mean, are you talking about like a Komodo, I think they're called, is like Japanese style looking dresses.
No, this thing was called a like a serpe, or I don't know. I'm not gonna look it up. Of course, I probably won't be able to find it if I'm looking at it. But if I'm looking for it, but I mean, it was just. I mean, it looked good. I mean, you know, she looked good in it and everything. But this person just decided that, you know, that it's racist for her to wear something from the China, from a culture different than hers. You know, and the point in the meme that you're talking about in the book has Beyonce there with blonde hair.
Hey,
I don't think that's natural.
Yeah, I don't think she would be called out in that, saying she's appropriating, you know, Caucasian culture. I mean, I remember this article once. It was, I think it was a year or two ago. This woman went to Mexico because she wanted to find some good recipes, because she wanted to start a Mexican restaurant. And there was talk that even she may have actually stolen recipes. That's a separate argument. But the point that, you know, you're finding out some recipes for your Mexican restaurant back in the U.S., you're culturally appropriating that food, because you have no right as a white person to open a Mexican restaurant. Why would you do that? That's pretty much what it's talking about, is like, you better stay in your bubble, friend. If you're white, you better stay with your pizza and beer. And if you're black, you better stay with your watermelon and malt liquor. You know, it's all the racial stereotypes. It's like, we get stereotyped just as much. It's crazy, man.
That's actually in my book. I actually talk about that.
I thought that I was reading that. Like, man, that'd be a good example to throw in. What page is that? I want to look that up in a minute.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Two white women decided to start a burrito truck in Portland, Oregon. Things were going well when a local weekly newspaper decided to do a spotlight on them. Well, they were soon out of business. The ladies explained that while they were on vacation in Mexico, they talked to local vendors and scrounged together some recipes. Well, apparently that's not, you know, you're not allowed to do that. They were accused of colonizing Mexican food. That's the exact phrase that they used, that they were colonizing Mexican food. And they went out of business. They drove them out of business. Some of those Portland people who, you know, start up a truck or something. The laws are real loose on that up there. There's sort of good deregulation on that, actually. But these people are insane. You know, and I don't mind if Portland wants to be this psychotic little enclave of these social justice warriors. I just don't want to have anything to do. I don't want to be forced into a situation like that. And especially since, I mean, these people would rather have it, you know, that the government would pass laws so that people couldn't do stuff like that. If they want to do that on their own and just be complete, you know, be complete assholes about it, and put people out of business, that's fine. But you know, where this is heading is that they would prefer to get laws passed in order to do this, in order to get this, in order so that things, so that colonization like this can't happen again. That's why these people are nuts, man.
Yeah, absolutely nuts.
That's why I wrote the book, because there aren't enough people who realize that, you know, I had people on my first book, everybody from like 10-year-old people telling me that their 10-year-old children were reading it, up to like people saying they were giving it to their dads, and that mm-hmm. their dads were reading it and passing it along to friends.
That's great to hear. So the first book did well. This book will do just as well, I imagine, or probably much better. Cause you said, did you say this book got printed better? Is it something like that? It was a better print.
I like the way it looks better. it just the look of it, the way it was formatted, I liked it better than the way the first book came out. But I mean, the first book didn't come out bad. This book came out way better than I thought it was going, way better than I thought it was going to. So, yeah. So where do we want to move on to from here?
Well, chapter four is really interesting to me because, like I mentioned earlier, I go to a college campus and I kind of see Antifa around sometimes. And, I have like 25,000 leftists walking around my campus is my point. So that's like a lot of stupid walking around. So I want to quote this whole paragraph because I'm a history nerd. I think this is really important. It starts in 1920s Italy as a response to Benito Mussolini, his National Fascist Party. The Arditi del Popolo, or the People's Daring One, was made up of communists, revolutionary trade unionists, socialists, anarchists, Republicans, and some military officers. So, as opposed to the people that call themselves Antifa today, some of these people could take care of themselves. On September 11th, 1926, Gino Lasciutti attempted to firebomb Mussolini's car and failed. He was imprisoned. He did manage to escape prison in 1943, but he was ironically killed by a Nazi bombing on the island of Ischia. So I thought that was a really interesting historical point.
Yeah, they're taking the name of a movement that was started in the 20s by a bunch of people that I probably wouldn't want to have anything to do with. But I mean, the way the fascist party was going in Italy and, you know, the oppression that was starting, you know, things like that make strange bedfellows, but you know, these people were, you had former military in there. You had people who, you know, could take care of themselves. And that's not what you see today. I mean, they don't, and these are people that just go off a college camp, you know, come off of the college campus. And, you know, I've heard interviews with former Antifa and they say there's a lot of, you know, like hard drug use, you know, not smoking weed. I'm talking about, you know, heroin addiction.
Yes.
That a lot of these people are just, you know, they have serious, most of them, you know, I think it's fair to say that they have mental problems. And
it's funny, you know, but it isn't. Like at some point these people are mentally deranged, and you know, you wouldn't really make fun of someone who's like anorexic or who has like a mental disorder. Yet these people are kind of in line with that. Their lives are so personally screwed up that they think they're a victim. They genuinely believe that it's impossible to go out and make a life for yourself, that they're always going to be held back. And it's kind of along the lines of that quote, you know, if you think it's true, it becomes true. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't get there's a martyr complex there too. Everybody who does, you know, the whole world is becoming fascist. Well, this government's been fascist for a long time. I mean, they've been, you know, if you look at some of the hallmarks of fascism, centralizing of business, I mean, so many businesses are in bed with the government. I mean, all you have to do is look at 2008 bailouts and too big to fail. I mean, that's peak fascism right there. They've convinced a lot, like, you know, the conservatives who, you know, you're not allowed to, you know, conservatives talk about free speech all day, except if you, you know, want to take a knee for the national anthem or, you know, things like that. You know, so there's fascism all around. You know, I say that the right has many of the hallmarks of fascism because they also have the nationalism, and the left is pure fascism without the nationalism.
Yeah, I guess so. The big distinction is that Hitler was a national socialist, meaning he theoretically wanted to make the whole world Germany, but he wanted one big nationalized country. Whereas international socialism, well, the end of the Communist Manifesto says something like working men of the world unite. So it's like an international movement that we want socialism to be everywhere. So that's the only real difference. They're both socialist in nature. They both have centralized state control of everything. They both have many of the same characteristics, except communism killed at least 5-6 times more historically. Now, there is a decent point that, okay, communists had a long reign to kill people and Hitler's reign was kind of short. He may have killed a lot more people, but I don't think you can defend one or the other. I think they're just both evil. And it's like, do you denounce evil or not? But obviously the left has tried to make Hitler sound like he was as far right in our sense, but he was really not. He's really the opposite of a libertarian. He wanted government controlled everything. So did Stalin. So did Pol Pot. So did Mao. All these dictators.
Yeah, I mean, the commies talk about, you know, people calling themselves commies talk about they want the government to, they would have the government be, you know, centralize all business and everything. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of, it's what, you know, what is it? Fat, you know, communism wants the, wants private ownership, wants, not private ownership of the means of production, but, everyone to seize the means of production and for it to be for everyone, where, right.
Like the people own the means of production. So when socialists talk about the state, the state to them really just means like the collection of the workers, which doesn't really make sense. Like the collection of workers, like that, I agree with you, because plenty of the workers are fine and are like moving up in their jobs, you know, like normal people and like understand the, you know, the sacrifices their employers have to make. So, I mean, it's only really that. Oh, it's just totally bizarre. I got like two more questions for you.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm saying go ahead.
Okay, good. So your last chapter before your bonus section is, so what should we do? That's the title of the last chapter. And maybe we can drift into some personal experiences, but I can speak for myself in saying that I started this podcast to try and educate others. And I'm not a genius, but rather someone who has a really good memory. And I like to tell others what I learned day to day. But what do you think we should do? Because the answer is obviously subjective. You have minarchists that state, oh, we should just try to roll back government to three functions, when I feel like the minarchists compromise too damn much in that once you give government any leverage at all, saying like they should at least do this, you're going to eventually have to compromise in so many other things. And like you either have like a moral principle that like all violence and coercion is wrong, or you give some leverage to it and then it's kind of endless. So what do you think we should do, Mance?
Well, I mean, the title of that chapter has more to do about what are we going to do about this threat,
right?
Which is the cultural Marxist, I always start off with education, and you know, I was lucky enough growing up to have a Ukrainian grandmother who told me about the horrors of communism, told me that she had no family left in Ukraine. Wow. You know, so I mean, I got it. And she had seven. When her mom came to the United States, she left behind six sisters and no one after
Ukraine. Sorry.
She left in 1917. Wow. If you know your history. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to ask related to Holodomor.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, she left in 1917 and she never heard from her sisters again after 1933.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize it's like Ukraine is some of the most fertile land in the world. To have a shortage there, that had to be mandated.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of schools of thought that, you know, they in 1932 they realized that they were going to have a drought. Everything pointed towards a drought the next year. That there weren't going to be any crops, and it looks like the Ukraine decided that since they were part of the Union that they were going to rely. They were going to rely on the Union, and the Ukraine has always come last when it comes to the Soviet Union and Russia. And I just said the Ukraine, it's just Ukraine. It doesn't have a the in front of it. But a lot of historians believe that this was targeted because there were a lot of groups popping up in Ukraine that were anti-Soviet. So they decided, well, you know, let's just starve them. And numbers can vary. I think most would settle on a number around 7 million. But the, you know, it's rough, man. I've had people tell me that it didn't happen, you know, that it's all a lie. And
You hear that about the Holocaust. You hear that about Stalin's mass atrocities. You hear that Mao didn't really do it. You hear Pol Pot didn't really do it. Yeah, you hear all these things. There's always a defense for the most atrocious things that existed in history.
I had someone tell me the other day that, you know, it's all propaganda, that North Korea is the way it is, that North Korea is actually a paradise. I've heard the same thing about Cuba, except I know people who, I lived in South Florida for many years, and I got to know a lot of Cuban people. A lot of people who were first generation, who had come over directly.
Yeah.
My uncle went to Cuba And I knew people who had visited, Americans who had visited Cuba, and they're like, yeah, don't, it's.
They drive 1950s cars and stuff because they don't really trade.
Well, yeah, they don't. I mean, well, and we don't, we, you know, in the United States won't trade with them.
Right.
But, you know, one thing that's great about the Cuban people is if Americans go down there, and really the best way to do it is to fly into Cancun and then just buy a ticket there. And in Havana, if you tell them not to stamp your passport, they won't stamp your passport.
And just these freaking communist regimes, man. I mean, obviously Cuba claims they have like a 99% plus literacy rate, but what is the point of being literate if you cannot read what you want to?
Yeah. I mean, they, the Cuban people, like if Americans who go there secretly, you know, cause they have some there in Havana, there are some amazing, and around Havana, there are some amazing resorts. And, you know, a lot of Europeans go there. I've been on planes coming back from Europe and asked people where they're going. And they're like, oh, we're going to Cuba. But there's no reason that this embargo has had to go on this long. And people who've been, Americans who've been there will tell you that the Cuban people do not hold a grudge against us. They understand. And when Americans go there, they're treated very nicely.
I have a Cuban friend. I've made like 2,000 friends in the past month. Like, I can't keep track, but I know I have one friend who came from Cuba, and he talks about being called a communist is one of the worst insults ever. And I'm sure you've seen the movie Scarface in the beginning when before he goes to Freedom Town and like stabs the communist to death. He's being asked all these questions and he's like, are you a communist? You like communism? They tell you what to do. They tell you what to think. There's a great scene. I mean, it's a great movie, but I don't think Cubans are very fond of communism because it's destroyed their way of life. It set them back like 70, 80 years. Technologically, I mean, that's horrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like the only people that really like Cuban communism are college students here.
Right.
Or what's funny is I've been hearing lately that in Miami, Cubans, like second and third generation Cubans, they're buying it, in, no matter what their grandparents tell them or their parents tell them, they're buying into the propaganda that, that Cuba's a great place. And, you know, I mean, there is, but there, you know, there is a lot of propaganda that we hear about Cuba that is, that's just pure propaganda. I was listening to the Ripple Effect podcast yesterday, and he had an author on who was talking about, he had just written a book on the Cuban mob in, especially around New York City. And they were talking a lot about lies that the CIA and that the government has put out, a lot of propaganda about a lot of things in Cuba. And, you know, if you really want to know what's going on in Cuba, just talk to somebody who used to live there. Just like anything else, don't listen to the government. Talk to somebody who actually experienced it.
Jesus. Yeah, definitely. Well, I got one more question for you, and it is, well, I just gotta. So the end of the book is titled The Left Can't Meme. I guess this was a little bonus you add to the book. Tell us about that, because the left most definitely cannot meme.
Well, I mean, I wanted to have some fun with it. The subject matter of the book is so serious. And anybody who makes memes, anybody who shares memes, anybody who, like myself, who collects memes and, you know, writes a lot, makes a lot of memes, realizes right off the bat, if I've had, you know, so many interactions with leftists online, when they share a meme, it's usually like just awful. I mean, a meme has to be short and clever, or has to, you know, really send the message, has to be impactful, but it has to have some humor to it, too, as well. Most often.
Definitely.
But I mean, they don't have a sense of humor. I mean, people on the left don't have a sense of humor, and their memes are just, you know, so basically I think I have five or six sections, little sections, trying to explain why I believe their memes are such garbage. And, I hope, you know, when people read it, they'll have fun with it, because it was a lot of fun to write it. And,
yeah. When I'm reading, I'm just like, man, you were definitely having a blast writing this. Well, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, dude. Obviously, this is the first time me and you spoke, but I feel like me and you could just probably talk for hours and hours and hours, and just like one of us would have to shut each other up. So I got the book behind. It looks great. Get a link to your first and second book, and a link to, just mention real briefly, you host a podcast. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, the podcast is called the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I actually came up with the name for the podcast because I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, and I thought that there are free men beyond the wall in Game of Thrones, and I thought, well, that's actually a clever thing. So I said, I'll name the podcast that. And then I was like, my legal name is unpronounceable. What do I want to do about that? Because I've spent my whole life having people butcher the fuck out of my name. So for professional reasons, what should I do? And I could have picked any name, but I decided, well, in Game of Thrones, the free men beyond the wall are, you know, their king, quote unquote. His name is Mance Rayder. And I was like, fuck it.
I love it.
I'm going to take that name. And, you know, I've caught so much shit over it. You know, it's like whenever I get in debates online, it's so easy. Cause I mean, I destroy most people in debates. They just do not. Most people can't even stay on subject. You know,
it's hard to find people to debate because they're not going to debate with you. Leftists like to try to debate people who like aren't that educated, but yeah, they're not going to mess with us.
Well, even people on the right, you know, these hard ass conservatives that I just can't stand, you know, that I have utter disdain for almost as much as the left. Eventually they'll be like, well, you're not even using your real name and everything. I'm like, look, I put my face, you know, my face is on the profile. And this wouldn't even be an issue unless I had chosen a name from the book. If I had just chosen the name John Smithson, you wouldn't even know that that wasn't my real name, and you wouldn't even be able to bring this up. So this isn't even part of the argument. So quit it. You know, it's like you're just doing this because you've lost.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just decided to take the name of an ancillary character. You know, a character that in the TV show has all of 12 minutes in 6 seasons. And people make a big deal out of it. And, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of, you know, if people watch a TV show or read the book and they want to Google Mance Rayder, well, guess who comes up first?
Hey,
my podcast.
Yeah. So I'm going there, man. That's a really good idea. Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, dude. I want to have you back on sometime so we can just discuss libertarianism, because I think me and you are definitely in the same mindset about most things. So we could just go on and on and on. So thanks a bunch, Mance.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Hey, everyone. Please like, follow, donate, subscribe, and share. Any donations will be used to reach more people.